I want to share with you, this has been a really special week for me. There many things happened. There are two deaths this week in my life. And so losing someone in your life, they are very precious opportunity for practice. And both of them I have looked up to as a role model in how they have lived their life. And so they have been bodhisattvas for me. Some of you may have heard of the term bodhisattva in the very first week we started practicing here. When I talked about the Bodhisattva Avalokiteshvara, whose name we chant at the end of the evening's practice, some people may think these are these sort of special deity or saint that lives somewhere else and that has nothing, very little to do with me. But actually, there are Bodhisattvas all around us if we open our eyes and recognize them. And this week, another thing that makes this week so special is that I got to read about a story of a bodhisattva in New York City. It was a report published in the Washington Post who talked about this person by the name of Rhonda Roland Shearer, who's the widow of the scientist Stephen Jay Gould, who had the experience of finding protective gear for the firefighters and everyone who ran to ground zero during 9/11 to help them protect themselves during when they were trying to look for survivors in the wreckage. And this story talked about how she's doing this again during the pandemic, when she noticed that the donations she had given to organizations that are supposed to provide protective gear, personal protective equipment, PPEs, to the frontline health care workers. The people who needed them most weren't getting them. Somehow it got stuck somewhere in the bureaucracy. It didn't go to where the need is the greatest. So what she did was she took it upon herself, drawing on her experience, bringing protective gear to the firefighters in Ground Zero to source the PPEs and personally distributed them to the hospital workers. She just brought them outside the hospital and let everyone who can show a hospital worker pass to pick up some supply. And so there were lines outside these hospitals because of the need was so great. And a number of hospitals she went to, actually she got chased out by the security sent by the hospital. And when I read this story, I did a little deliberate I could to support her work. But I've been thinking about her all week because she's a great example of the bodhisattva in our lives. And I thought I will use this opportunity to share about how we can practice recognizing the bodhisattvas all around us in our lives. You might be living with one right now, so or you might have a neighbor or work with one. So I will draw on her story just to convey these points. So what is a bodhisattva? we might think that Bodhisattva is just someone who is just like so amazing, so great, that like that's very far away from us. But here we're really talking about who practices, live their life, engage in deeds, like a Bodhisattva. So one important characteristic is that someone who put the concern for others over their self-concern. Most of the time, we have so much self-concern or thinking so much about what we are uncomfortable with and what is bothering us and all that stuff that we don't have space to recognize the needs of others and other people's suffering, and more importantly, noticing what it is that we can do to alleviate the suffering. And so this pra this th this attention, the putting the concern for others over our self concern, it's a very important part of being a Bodhisattva. Now, very often when I brought this point up, this thought might have come up in your mind already, that that's like, well, but like I already always think about other people and I forget about myself. And actually, I often do that. So that's not that's talking about here's not recognizing the great need of the suffering of other people, and being willing to put that above our need for comfort. So very often, that's at least we practice from here. So she, of course, I'm not saying that this is someone whose life is just perfect, but she's doing okay, and so she feels that I can make myself available to help alleviate other people's suffering. So if you do find yourself in a situation that you are suffering so great, then of course, what you need to do is to make use of the practice to help yourself with your suffering first, so that you will be able to be available to others. This is quite important at this point, which is different from being absorbed in self-concern. Most people who suffer a great deal is that all they worry about is their own suffering and just try to get away from their own suffering. And some of you had already mentioned when we do that, it's just more suffering. And but you notice their suffering, which is making maybe make it difficult for you to also be available for others. That motivates you to make use of the practice to not give rise to more suffering, so that our suffering can be reduced and thus allow us to become available to help others. So, and her what she did embody the Bodhisattva deeds that's often discussed in the paramitas. So, for example, some of you might have learned this already, right? So, such as the perfection of generosity, the giving, and it's the form of giving that's giving without any expectation of recognition. Or it's not a kind of transactional giving, that you're not giving them so that they will give you back something later. It's not that, it's just giving to give. And it is actually a natural function of compassion and wisdom for a bodhisattva. So there are different kinds of giving, different things you can give, right? So giving money. So what she actually did was she took an equity loan out of her own house to borrow $600,000 to purchase the PPEs. She wasn't waiting for anyone to raise money for her. It's too urgent. So she went and did that, and giving her own money, and also gave her own experience to knowledge, because she knew how to do that. She and her daughter actually realized, well, you know, we actually know how to do this because we have done this before. Very few people have done what they have done during 9/11. So giving of experience, knowledge, and also giving fearlessness, doing something to alleviate someone's fear, someone's anxiety, that these healthcare workers were so scared of getting infected because they don't have adequate protection. And by bringing them these proper gowns, some of them these like Tyvek gowns, they're able to do the work of caring for the patients, but not having that fear. And she even brought them additional kind of surgical masks that they can bring to their family members, because a lot of healthcare workers also fear bringing the virus home to their family members. So, giving fearlessness, also the perfection of patient's endurance. What is the patient's endurance? Is to be able to endure because of your vow to help others, to bring benefit to others, but not. It may not be appreciated by everyone, right? So be able to endure other people, not the lack of appreciation. So remember, even though these some of these hospitals kicked her out with the security guard, she did not give up. She stuck with it, and in fact, she mentioned that some of these hospital workers who called security to kick her out later came out to get in line to get the protective gear from her. And they got it, not holding a grudge against them. Patience, endurance. Very often, we may not be able to do that, get too upset. So, to endure other people's lack of kindness in the process of giving, doing the Bodhisattva deed. And also, actually, what happened was her daughter helped her, was working with her during the work in at Ground Zero, and was exposed to a lot of the toxins at Ground Zero, and later was diagnosed with thyroid cancer that was attributed to her exposure to these toxins. So here is someone whose daughter had gone through that and didn't become better about what she did. So think about it. A lot of people, they have done some selfless deed, but had found themselves suffering or great loss from that, and can become quite bitter. And so the perfection of patience, endurance is, yeah, you know, that happened, and I keep going, and they're doing this again, not becoming discouraged or angry at the circumstances. So these can be our examples. That's why Bodhisattvas are can be our examples in life that we can learn from. As I mentioned before, of course, Bodhisattva, their important characteristic is great compassion. What's great compassion? Great compassion is the willingness to go towards the suffering instead of running away from it. We talked about going into our suffering, and a number of you mentioned how it allow you to understand something you didn't before. And so in her case, during the lockdown, most people were staying away from hospital areas, avoiding coming close to people who might be infected. In fact, my own doctor told me not to get close to a hospital, avoid going to a hospital at all costs. Here it is. She brought boxes and boxes of this gear to the hospital, to hand it out to these healthcare workers who are most exposed to the infections. So, like what they did during 9/11, right after 9/11, running to what like other frontline workers who ran to what's the dangerous place to help others. And that is what great compassion also looks like. And now it's important that to understand, to remember that great compassion is balanced with wisdom. Without wisdom, the compassion may become counterproductive. So, for example, in her process of deciding how much money to take out of our house, equity, she's like, I could take out more, but I will lose a home, and then I won't have any place to live, and she will not be very useful in doing this work later on. Right? So, being wise about what is the limit that is practical, and also the clarity to recognize how to help. Remember what happened was that at first she thought she donated to organizations, but she did not just say, oh, I donated, done, close my eyes. It must be done already. What she did was she stayed engaged because she wanted to make sure that these people were helped, and that's how she realized that that wasn't working. Staying engaged with that and noticing what went wrong so that she could identify what it is, that she actually was someone who has the skill and connection to do something. So some of us in the past, we tend to sort of express this frustration of, I felt like I should do something, but I don't know what I can do. And yeah, sometimes that we it may what other people are doing may not be something that is within our causes and conditions to do, but it does not mean that there are not other things we can do. Do we pay attention to the total reality around us to identify what it is that we actually can do? So actually, some of you mentioned how you reach out to people that you work with and make a connection that way. That too is something that we can do to bring benefit to others. And also, very often, bodhisattvas engage in the cultivation of skillful means. Sometimes when we think about when you want to help some people, you just think, imagine I just go and just help people. Well, like how? What would be the most, what would be an effective way? So, a couple of things really strike me from her experience, I wanted to share with you. She had these supplier people who have access, who can find these high quality American made PPEs that themselves. And not only were they willing to go and source them for her, they were willing to let her take them on credit, $1 million of it. That doesn't happen to everyone. And that reminds me of the practice that Master Shunin often talk about of cultivating good affinity with people. Everyone we meet, we remember practicing being kind and being respectful. In this way, like Master Shunyan talking about how with compassion, there's no enemy. We make sure everyone we come into contact with, that we do business with, we treat them with respect and compassion. We are cultivating these great affinity that in times like this, that you will be able to draw on to do the work of a bodhisattva. And also seeing how to navigate the situation clearly. She talked about how some of these hospitals who chased her out with a security guard and telling her that, well, you can do this secretly, so it's okay, you can like help these workers, but like you do it secretly, like no camera, no journalist. And she refused because she needs to be accountable to the donors. There's a lot of money involved. And so clarity about what needs to be done. Sometimes when we might be too eager to be helpful, we might forget the bigger picture issues that we need to take into consideration with. So skillful means drawing on our clear awareness of the totality of a very complex situation. What would that involve? That will also involve remembering the third of the Bodhisattva vows, although that is not the only one that is important here, but vowing to master limitless approaches to the Dhamma. And that does not only mean the Buddhist teachings, but all the skills dealing with people, navigating complex situation, even the skill in capitalizing on the wonderful technologies such as social media to mobilize support. So Bodhisattva need to do all this. I want to break down what this real life Bodhisattva did to help us think about how we ourselves can learn from these examples to cultivate ourselves as Bodhisattva. And just in case that some of you are thinking, ooh, like I want to be a Bodhisattva like her, you know, that's a really nice thought and nice vow. But also I would like you to remember that there is not one person that's the Bodhisattva. We do live in a culture who like to identify individual heroes. There's not one person who is a Bodhisattva. She's the face of this Bodhisattva deed that has been co-created by everyone. Everyone involved in the situation. So some of you mentioned the coronavirus Bodhisattva, right? So if we don't have the this coronavirus Bodhisattva, that would not be the whole situation of overwhelmed healthcare system. Of course, you have patients who got sick and need care by the healthcare workers, and because of the healthcare workers needing to go to work and be protected, and also asking for help because they are so scared of their safety. Of course, the hospital security who chased her out, and the donors who answered the call to support the work, and all the volunteers who put together the packages, and those who are willing to supply these PPEs, and on and on and on. Everyone co-created this Bodhisattva deed that we are talking about. So the reason why I want to mention this is that when we make a vow to be a Bodhisattva, we might think that we have to be that person. And it sort of reminds me of, I was thinking about this during dinner. And I live with a Bodhisattva who bakes a lot of yummy bread. I don't know how to bake at all. And so, well, he's the Bodhisattva, but like, well, it kind of needs me to want to eat this bread for him to be doing this. So, it is not to diminish the great vow and the selfless sacrifice made by these people. I do want to invite you to practice recognizing the Bodhisattva deeds all around us and how it's co-created by everyone, including ourselves. So sometimes in the way we can think about it, we play different roles in different situations. Sometimes you may be the person who's like the Bodhisattva who's doing the helping. But actually, the only reason why you can be doing the Bodhisattva deed is because someone is in need and others who's supporting what you are doing. Sometimes you are the person in need that allows someone else to be doing the helping and giving, co-creating the Bodhisattva deed. So I want to mention this to help us remember when we think that I'm struggling and I need help and I'm a burden. Well, if you allow yourself to be supported and helped by others, then you would be helping to co-create. So Bodhisattva deed, allowing someone to take the role of the Bodhisattva this time. And I want to talk about the practice of recognizing these Bodhisattvas all around us. Because we need to remember what we see is the reflection of our mind. As the sixth patriarch Huinen mentioned in the Platform Sutra, if we only see wrongdoings of others, we are the one who need to reflect on our mistakes. What he's referring to is that we only see problems. That's a reflection of our mind that is filled with problems. Remembering how we are, what we are cultivating in our mind, that is going to result in the world we see and live in. I'm going to invite you to reflect on that. I do want to clarify, this does not mean that we pretend that everyone is perfect and are saints and all that stuff. That's not what some people do that. Oh, if everyone's an angel and you, I don't see anything that is unjust. No, we still see injustice. We still see disparity, plenty of it in plain view in this pandemic. we see the troubles in the system, that we can do the work to co-create a better one. We can, of course, we can see cruelty, we can see suffering. So we're not talking about putting our head in a bubble, thinking, pretending everything is wonderful. What we are talking about here is to be able to see, to recognize the Bodhisattva around us, and in action around us. As I mentioned earlier, things that are happening right in front of us. So I mentioned how they are they're co-created, and so practicing to see what's around us more holistically and see everything in more relational terms instead of being these separate, reified entity. So when we can recognize Bodhisattvas around us in our life, then we live in Buddha land, or co-create this Buddha land in our heart. So if we only see everything, everyone is so horrible and can't help but give rise to hatred, then we live in hell. So when we can cultivate the Buddha land in our heart, then we can be Bodhisattva more often for others. So I will encourage you to engage in this practice and also to learn from the examples of Bodhisattvas around us. Don't forget the ones right around you in your life.